argument is Hall versus Innotus Corporation. Mr. Bankton.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Whether to dismiss a bankruptcy petition with or without prejudice, and or whether to impose or to award attorney's fees by parties aggrieved by its filing rests in the sound discretion of bankruptcy courts. That discretion necessarily lies between two points. On this appeal, we ask this Court to define as the point at which cases must be dismissed with prejudice and attorney's fees must be awarded absent abuse of discretion is in those circumstances where the bankruptcy case is filed for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to abuse the bankruptcy process. It is the well-settled law of this circuit.
So what is it you think Hall was trying to accomplish? I couldn't really figure out.
Your Honor, what he was trying to do was, in his words, quote, slow down litigation in which he was personally a plaintiff and in which a company personally are 100% owned by him were plaintiffs by invoking the so-called automatic stay arising under Section 362 of the Bankruptcy Act.
Mr. Bankton, the court seems to have looked at different testimony from Mr. Hall where he says he was hoping for some sort of global settlement of everything, figured if it could all be before the bankruptcy court, it could all be resolved. And the court, at least, didn't perceive the kind of egregious abuse that you see in this. Now, is the judge just wrong when the judge doesn't see that the bankruptcy procedures are being so terribly abused?
Yes, Your Honor, both the bankruptcy judge and the district judge committed plain error because all of these cases involve actions in which Mr. Hall was either a plaintiff or his company was a plaintiff. And while resort to the bankruptcy court by companies that are besieged by litigation as defendants is commonplace, when one seeks to slow down litigation, which one is a plaintiff.
Well, was he suing his creditors? Were these suits against his creditors?
Yes, these suits were against my client, Your Honor, both by Mr. Hall personally and by Consolidated, his wholly owned company, and against insurance companies.
Were the insurance companies creditors also?
No, Your Honor. No insurance company was a creditor.
So you were a creditor, but the insurance companies were what?
Your Honor, one of my clients, one of seven people I represent, was a creditor.
But you know, on page 15 of your brief, you indicate, you know, at the time Hall filed this petition, the bulk of his scheduled liabilities of $5.1 million was represented by this contingent liability, his personal guarantee of the Sonova loan. That's $4.5 million. And of course, it's Consolidated, it's going down and down and down, it becomes more and more likely that this is a $4.5 million liability he really has. And then, in a somewhat contradictory way, you then go on to say scheduled assets of $7.2 million were the main represented by the $7 million he hoped to get from you in the securities fraud action, which you quickly go on to say proved to be zero. So it sounds to me like he really didn't have much at all in the way of assets discounted for the likelihood of success, and he might have had a very significant set of liabilities, again, discounted for what was likely to happen. And, you know, when you have bigger liabilities than assets, people sometimes file for bankruptcy.
Your Honor, that is true. However, both cases were contingent. And either he was, which is another reason, not the reason on which we rely, but another reason in which the filing of a Chapter 11 petition, which seeks reorganization, was in bad faith.
How do you reorganize an individual? I thought Chapter 13 is for individuals.
Your Honor, Chapter 11 is available to individuals with $1 million liabilities and $1 million assets. It is available to a natural person, but the amount of the
liability. Does that make Hall a debtor in possession?
Exactly correct, Your Honor, just like his company. And if I could finish, Judge Wood, my answer.
Sorry to interrupt.
Depending upon the answer to the very same question, contingent litigation, Mr. Hall was either a multimillionaire and therefore not eligible for any relief under Chapter 11, or, as Your Honor correctly points out, hopelessly insolvent, millions of dollars in debt with no assets, also under no fair measure of rationality, a candidate for reorganization.
But now that's, you know, the thing that strikes me, I guess, is that when, you know, insurance companies or anybody else value claims, they don't assign a random number of 50% chance of winning or 100% chance of winning or 0% chance of winning. They will evaluate claims as best they can. Now, of course, sometimes they're wrong. So it seems to me one needs to know, in a sense, the discount factor on both of those sides, and it may be different. He may have had a bigger chance of losing on the FINOVA claim, since it was really Consolidated's problem, than he would have had. You certainly don't think he had any chance of winning on your claim, and things proved to be that way, but I guess you didn't think so to begin with.
Well, Your Honor, the FINOVA liability was also secured by all of the assets of Consolidated Industries. Mr. Hall's personal guarantee was an accommodation guarantee, and while not in the record and not raised below, to the best of my knowledge, you have to pay a dollar to FINOVA under that guarantee. But, Your Honor, again, I think we're straying from the point, and that
wrong.
Is that
there's something wrong about your all-or-nothing argument. You wouldn't say, would you, that a person who owns a lottery ticket can't declare bankruptcy until the lottery is conducted?
Absolutely not. I agree with you.
Having
correct.
A legal claim is like having a lottery ticket.
No, it isn't, Your Honor.
Yes, it is, because, of course, most of them aren't worth anything.
Your Honor, the liability
most
and
planets lose.
Yes, Your Honor, but the facts here are different.
I think he was broke when he had this so-called $7.2 million in assets, because the actual present value discounted by the probability of his winning was much less.
And since we're trying to figure out whether the district court was so completely wrong to think that there was not the kind of abuse here that justifies dismissal with prejudice, these are all relevant considerations. Maybe he wasn't abusing the system at all. Maybe he was filing, you know, and he dismisses it not too long afterwards when it turns out the settlement isn't going to work. But that's what I think the reason the district court decides, and as the bankruptcy court had done before it, that we didn't have such an egregious case that we needed to go down the road you're urging on us.
Your Honor, that is incorrect for two reasons. One, the asset and the liability are inextricably linked. They're not a contingent lottery ticket here and a contingent unrelated liability there. There is a direct correlation between the contingent asset and the contingent liability. He can have one but never both. Secondly, the stated reason for filing this petition, and the record is clear on this, was none of the hypotheticals which the court has mentioned, but rather to, quote, slow down litigation, unquote, in which he was the plaintiff. And the automatic stay and the bankruptcy code has nothing to do with slowing down lawsuits in which people are plaintiffs. And if that is the stated goal, and after that goal was stated, it was brought to the attention of his attorneys, the authorities of this court, saying that the automatic stay has nothing to do with actions by plaintiffs. What did he do? He filed an adversary proceeding asking an Article I court to enjoin an Article III court from prosecuting claims in which he was a plaintiff. Now, if that is not consummation of the bankruptcy system and the civil justice system, I can't posit a better example.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Pollack?
May I please the court, Jonathan Pollack from the Apple William Hall. I think it's very important to understand that since this is an abuse of discretion appeal, and it is an abuse of discretion standard, your notice has not pointed to one word, one assertion,
you know,
one fact.
Look, what he just said, I thought it sounded right, actually. I cannot for the life of me figure out what the motive for this bankruptcy proceeding was, I don't get it.
Well,
I don't get it at all. Slowing down litigation, global settlement, what on earth is that about?
The global settlement was because Consolidated's
first of all, it's not a legitimate motive for bankruptcy that you want a global settlement, whatever that is. You have to tie it to something in bankruptcy law.
I believe we cited some opinions, Your Honor, that did indicate that global resolution of an individual's debts, which are interrelated with a corporation's debts, is in fact a worthy goal. We have to understand the context within which we were working here. We have consolidated, which is under barrage of a class action lawsuit, which, according to Bill Hall, the liabilities of that class action lawsuit had been misrepresented to him when he purchased the company. Lo and behold, what he finds out is that this FANOVA financing that he signed off on could very easily be called. And the purpose of what the bankruptcy petition was filed for his personal bankruptcy, was to allow all the parties to sit together in one proceeding before Judge Grant.
There's nothing to forbid parties from sitting down together. You don't have to bring a lawsuit. If you have a zillion creditors, you can sit down with your creditors.
Perhaps there's a larger issue that
you bring back. Yeah, well, forget the larger. Look, be concrete. What is this about? What does global settlement have to do with it? As I understand it, he has a cause of action that somehow is his principal asset, and you can't use the automatic stay to stay your own suits.
I think we're in agreement on that.
What on earth is going on here?
Well, it's not just the stay of those proceedings that was important.
Don't say just. What is the possible excuse for the debtor trying to use the automatic stay to stay his own lawsuit?
That was not the sole purpose, Your Honor, and I think
that is
the problem.
But that is a completely illegitimate purpose, isn't it? Will you concede that much?
I will not concede that is in its...
Really?
In the context of
I
everything,
understand
it's not.
You. What could be more frivolous than to...
This was not on the eve of a foreclosure.
To prevent yourself from suing.
This was not on the eve of a foreclosure. There was nothing like
that.
Well,
you answer my question. How is it that any person represented by a lawyer could think that getting an automatic stay of his own litigation, the litigation he had brought, could be a legitimate purpose of bankruptcy?
If the sole purpose was to slow that down...
How could that be a legitimate purpose, sole or one of a thousand? It's still completely frivolous. Now let's talk about the other purpose, this global settlement. Now, why is it that bankruptcy would facilitate a global settlement, whereas going to the creditors wouldn't?
The record that you have before you, Your Honor, would indicate that the lawyers and Mr. Hall, at that time that were representing Mr. Hall, believed that by having everything underneath Judge Grant, that everything would be able to be resolved under one construct. For better or for worse, Judge Grant believed that that was true, and that is why he went ahead and dismissed the case without prejudice. It is not an abuse of discretion under this context. Let's understand that at the trial court, the trial record you have in front of you, not to avoid your question, Your Honor, but the trial record you have in front of you, the issues presented mainly
no
during that was not that
there's
issue.
There's no reasoning in these opinions at all. They never explain, and you're not explaining, what it is that bankruptcy in this particular setting does to facilitate a global settlement. Now, you can understand how, if you seek bankruptcy in order to stay your creditors' claims against you, you are facilitating a global settlement because, you know, you're forcing them to go into bankruptcy in order to get their money. They can no longer litigate. But if you go into bankruptcy to stay your own claims, how is that facilitating a global settlement?
It was not just to stay the claims against him.
What was it else to do?
The FANOVA claim that was a contingent liability needed to be stayed. It was a significant liability. And because the way the consolidated bankruptcy was going, it was important in the bankruptcy context to seek that protection. Is that the only reason? No. But I think for purposes of what we're talking about here, that is a fundamental consideration.
Did the bankruptcy judge and the district judge discuss that as one of his aims?
Did the bankruptcy judge discuss that in his opinion, Judge Grant?
Yes.
No, I believe not.
Well, how can we uphold an exercise of discretion on any basis, on a basis different? If a judge has discretion, that means he's supposed to make the judgment, and we're not supposed to make it for him. And if Judge Grant was just going on this, to me, unintelligible global settlement business, I don't see how we can say, oh, by the way, he could have said that you did want to stay one of your creditors' actions.
he was not going solely on it. You have to understand that that argument was not before the trial court.
What else would he say besides global settlement?
That argument was not before the trial court. If you look at the record closely, 90% of the trial that we had was about the false oath on the deposition. We played two or three videotapes from that. The trial was only 2 days long, probably a total of about 7 hours. And we have to understand that the bulk of the trial did not focus on the issue they're now raising. And so it's a little unfair, I think, to ask Judge Grant to have included an argument in his opinion that really was not presented at the trial court. And to that extent, we may be going outside what the true issue on appeal is here. A notice knows that it's dead on the water on the abuse of discretion issue if it was solely going to appeal the issues that were raised at trial. And it had to find some way to narrow that issue and, in effect, create a straw man. So what it's done is it's created this sole purpose argument for the filing of the bankruptcy as somehow relating to staying down this litigation. But it simply was not what the record supports. The bulk of the record will support and indicate to the judges on this panel that the bulk of the evidence presented at trial did not relate to that issue. I'm not going to say that there isn't any evidence in the record on that, because that would be inaccurate. But the bulk of the evidence presented at trial did not relate on that issue. It related to the false oath to Finova on the affidavit.
You
the
did
false
say in your brief the purpose of the Chapter 11 filing was to facilitate a global settlement of all the patent issues.
Absolutely.
I don't see anything about your saying that it was to stay a creditor's suit against you.
The Finova, well, I think it's undisputed that Finova was not, I'm not going to stand here in front of you and say Finova was banging on the door.
Apparently it wasn't one of Mr. Hall's motives. At least it's not mentioned anywhere. As far as I know, maybe I've missed it.
Well,
you have mentioned it.
This bankruptcy proceeding only lasted for 120 days. If truly our...
Whatever it was, looked as phony as a $2 bill. Doesn't seem to me that there's any basis for him the only goal, which I still don't understand, was to slow down his own litigation.
And we would submit, Your Honor, that that is only a part of what was the
And the other part is this global settlement, which doesn't make any sense unless he was trying to stay creditors' actions against him, which you now say for the first time he was, but you haven't said it before, apparently.
I think what we're getting caught up here is perhaps in the semantics of was it the sole purpose or was it one of many purposes, and perhaps more importantly, when Judge Grant was making his decision.
And that's the global settlement. You didn't talk about many purposes.
Okay. Well, I guess we need to break the global settlement down then. I'm afraid
in other words, the global settlement is the overarching purpose and these others are subsidiary purposes to achieve that end?
I think that accurately states it, Your Honor. And again, I can't emphasize enough the fact that this was that the issue they're raising now to you was a minor issue in front of Judge Grant, which when we're looking at crawling
well,
inside whether
it's minor, he talked about the global settlement. This has been your theme from the beginning.
It's not the global settlement wasn't minor. That was major.
Yeah.
The issue of the on appeal of the issue that of what he notices raising in this case was minor, and that's my point, Your Honor. Is that when we're looking at whether or not Judge Grant abused his discretion because of the, when reviewing the facts in front of him and the argument by the counsel before him, that when we're crawling back in his head some year and a half ago, or a year ago, that is what we must do. We have sort of blown out of proportion, I think, certainly out of the trial
record. You have yet to indicate any legitimate purpose for the filing of this bankruptcy that is actually discussed in the papers.
Finova financing, I think, is an excellent example of the
Could
need.
Could you spell that out?
It's the interrelationship between his liability and Consolidated's. If as Consolidated, I think as Judge Wood correctly pointed out, if as Consolidated's bankruptcy continued to go downhill, the insurance companies yanked everything that they had out from underneath Consolidated, it became clear that Bill Hall's personal finances was going to be subject to collection by Finova if they chose to go that direction. It was important, very important, to Bill Hall to be able to prevent that and perhaps achieve a global settlement of that, which I've submitted.
You mean prevented by what? By by getting a stay against it, or what?
Much more so than the stay. Obviously, you're right, Your Honor. We can all just sit around in a conference room and try to work it out on a settlement basis. But we also know that there are bankruptcy protections that would have allowed that FANOVA debt to either have been released, reduced, or extinguished. So that is a prime example of the reason for the filing of the bankruptcy.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pollack. Mr. Banton, how much time?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to explain the motion.
Well, wait a second. Wait till you...
Worried about time, Your Honor. The explanation for the motive lies in this court's decision in Covey versus Commercial Bank of Peoria. That's the motive. That decision held, which follows on Your Honor's decision in Sonics, that when a business is sold for a positive sum, it's solvent. An exception to the Covey rule, although not with its four corners, is obviously it can't apply to a defrauded buyer. All of Consolidated's claims had as a principal element of their prima facie proof the insolvency of Consolidated when Mr. Hall bought it. His payment of $7 million, if he wasn't a defrauded buyer, results in the dismissal of those claims because it proves as a matter of law under the Covey decision it was solvent. How does he keep both claims alive with lots of zeros in them for a public company that has to report its liabilities? The moment his fraud case, the case he tries to slow down, falls, so too under Covey fall the Consolidated claims. That, we submit, and it's in our briefs, is the obvious motive for this bogus bankruptcy filing.
Well, let me see if I understand. Yes, I remember you met the discussion of the Covey case. I didn't understand that at all. Okay, so what you're saying is his suit, where he's the plaintiff and the thing that was mysteriously stayed, he's claiming that when he bought Consolidated, he was defrauded by the seller.
That is the essence of the action. That action had three claims for fraud: securities fraud, Indiana securities fraud, common law fraud, and breach of contract.
Okay, so if there was no fraud, you're saying that means Consolidated is what, prima facie solvent,
and there go Consolidated's claims. I think what you have to do is go back and read the Covey decision and say to yourself, does this decision apply to a purchaser who was defrauded? I think clearly it doesn't. The opinion doesn't address it in so many words. It talks about a stumble bum purchaser.
Now, but Consolidated is not solvent as a matter of law. That hurts it how? I mean, what claims does it lose?
Your Honor, virtually all of the claims being asserted against my clients by Mr. Hall's wholly owned company in bankruptcy court adversary proceeding had as an element of their prima facie proof that Consolidated was at the time Mr. Hall bought it and at earlier dates insolvent. His defense, Consolidated's defense to a Covey argument, while Mr. Hall's district court action is pending, they say, oh, well, Covey can't apply. Mr. Hall was defrauded. Look, he's suing for fraud in the bankruptcy court. That's the motive in slowing it all down, because this house of cards starts to fall, the moment the district court action is dismissed. It is now established as a matter of law that Mr. Hall was not defrauded. No other...
If he wasn't defrauded, how does that...
Because he paid seven...
If he wasn't defrauded, then he has no assets anymore.
No, sir. The payment that he wasn't defrauded means that the $7 million cash dollars he paid for Consolidated indicates that Consolidated was not insolvent. Covey says, what does insolvency mean? And the conclusion is that if a buyer pays a positive sum, it's solvent. a negative sum, it's insolvent. Here, in an arm's-length transaction, Mr. Hall paid $7 million
cash. Okay, so suppose that the result of the loss of his fraud suits is that Consolidated was, as a matter of law, solvent when he bought it. How does that affect Consolidated or him?
Because, Your Honor, in respect of each of the claims asserted by Consolidated, proof of insolvency is a prima facie element. Right? That he paid $7 million
in
cash.
So Consolidated has its own, of course, he owns Consolidated.
Exactly
Consolidated
correct.
Has its own claims against these creditors?
Against these defendants.
These defendants?
Yes, my clients.
So Consolidated is also suing, I see. And in its suit, it wants to show it's insolvent. Your clients.
Yes, an element of the claims asserted by Mr. Hall's company against my client, prima facie element, insolvency.
What are the claims of your clients?
Claims against my clients. Fraudulent transfer, breach of fiduciary duty against former officers and directors, unlawful dividend under Indiana corporate law. All of these claims turn on insolvency. For example, a director or officer of a corporation owes no duties to its creditors unless it's in the zone of insolvency.
What other claim? There were other claims pending against Consolidated at that time, were there not?
No, Your Honor. All of the claims, the answer is sort of. There were claims pending against Consolidated in state courts, but they were all the subject and had been since May of 1998 of the automatic stay. They had been stopped. Stopping those lawsuits is a proper object of the automatic stay and worked. If I could I just make two factual points? One, the record is clear that Mr. Hall was under no pressure from Finova or any other creditor. He had never made a demand. And secondly, with respect to my friend's, Mr. Pollack's, argument about what happened at the trial, what happened at the trial is what was required at the trial. There is the point we press here, and the only point really we press here, is been our main point from day one. It is based upon facts not in dispute. We had a trial to resolve disputed factual matters. And the disputed factual matters we referred to, and Judge Sharp in his opinion adopted our term, as aggravating circumstances, which should have tipped the scale in favor of extreme sanction even more in our direction. But those facts, unlike the purpose in filing this bankruptcy, were a dispute. And a trial was necessary. And therefore, it should not surprise anyone that what happened at the trial was litigation of the disputed factual matters.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case.